Welcome back to the special edition series of the Energy Transitions podcast, focusing on the decarbonization of Spain's transportation sector. Over the last three episodes, I've discussed with experts from UC Davis, Iberdrola, and Vector different elements of the decarbonization of transport in Spain, mainly through its electrification. We've covered topics including Spain's EV and charger uptake, what's been slowing things down, implications for the power grid and its management, and how businesses can profit from fleet electrification. In this episode, I talk to Francisco Carranza, partner with Futuraiser and former CEO of BaskVolt, about how the battery fits in as a nexus point between the EV and energy systems. Francisco, who will be chairing a session during this year's Enlit Europe in Bilbao, discusses the role of batteries in connecting these systems, Spain's significant supply chain potential, and how, although there is opportunity, tapping into the flexibility from EV batteries is still a work in progress. I'm Yusuf Latif, and this is the fourth and final episode of Spain's Journey to Greener Mobility. Enjoy the episode. Over the past three episodes of the podcast series, I've discussed how Spain's EV outlook has been lagging, but there's clearly potential and things look to be picking up. What is your take on the role of batteries in this outlook?
So as you know, Spain is a very price-sensitive market, and on batteries are about 40% of the cost of cars. So it is true that the more we progress in battery performance, in battery cost optimization, the more we will unlock markets like Spain, where people are really paying a lot of attention to the cost competitiveness of the whole car.
What has been holding it back, though? What has been the biggest challenge for the EV battery sector in Spain? And what do you think will be the major challenges facing the sector in the next 5 years?
In Spain and in Europe, the major challenge has been the regional players, so the European companies that have been getting themselves into the battery manufacturing. They have done it about a decade after their competitors in China and Korea. So from the expertise point of view, from the understanding of what it takes to manufacture battery, lithium-ion batteries, the European players were far behind the Chinese. And that translates at the end in cost competitiveness. So we all have been struggling to settle an European ecosystem that is competitive, but little by little is moving in the right direction. Now, Chinese companies are way more aggressive and they are deploying their own gigafactories in Europe. And Spain is probably one of the best countries to put a gigafactory because energy cost is relatively affordable. You have a lot of renewable energy. If you have a target of zero carbon, scope one, scope two, is a fantastic country for that. Labor cost is relatively low, and the labor force is very, very, very skilled. So a lot of people are really going to universities. It's a country with a strong tradition on manufacturing. So really probably one of the best countries to place a gigafactory in Europe.
I really like that you kind of bring in the labor force almost. I know that a big issue with the energy transition is obviously across sectors, we have to upskill, right? So it's interesting that Spain kind of has this labor force, which is quite well positioned to be a strong player. The country's no stranger to announcements for EV battery gigafactories. There's this one from PowerCo and Volkswagen in Valencia, an announcement from CATL, Stellantis in Zaragoza. And there's this research by Transport and Environment, which shows how planned capacity for gigafactories reaches 244 gigawatt hours by 2030. It's not a small number. Based off of all of this, what role do you think Spain could play in Europe's future battery value chain?
Well, you know, at the end of the day, there is a lot of uncertainty about the numbers. But what is clear is that Spain has always been one of the major locations for automotive manufacturing because of all the reasons I was mentioning before. And it is likely to be one of the key locations for battery manufacturing, right? So I don't know if at the end we're going to get to 240 gigawatt hours or a little bit less, a little bit more. It doesn't really matter, but for sure it's going to be one of the key countries on that. And the whole ecosystem is preparing itself to be welcoming more and more battery manufacturing projects because we know that the more we get to 100% electric vehicles in Europe, with this target that we have by 2035 of selling only electric cars for passenger vehicles, I mean, it doesn't really matter if it's 35, 37, or 40, whatever. We know it's when it's going to come. For sure, and I'm personally convinced Spain will retain one of the top spots in manufacturing that capacity.
Hi, Laurie here from the Enlit Europe team. Are you ready to drive the EV revolution? Then join us at the Mobility Zone at Enlit Europe, 18th to 20th of November in Bilbao. This is where transport meets energy, bringing together utilities, regulators, OEMs, charge point operators, and innovators from across the value chain. The Mobility Zone puts you at the heart of the action. Don't miss it. Be part of the conversations shaping the future of mobility at Enlit Europe in Bilbao.
I like that you mentioned how they have this really prominent role in terms of automotive manufacturing. That also kind of is a bit of a throwback to episode one of this series, where I discussed with some researchers from UC Davis about how they have almost a legacy in the sector in this regard. It's really interesting. You bring up the increasing role of China. And I think when you mentioned that, obviously, geopolitically almost, the sector is very interesting right now. And it'll be interesting to watch as well. What do you think will be the role of tariffs and their impact on the sector? Do you think that in mind of this, OEMs, have they been experiencing any impact? Can battery manufacturing be truly cost competitive in Europe, considering how things are developing?
I think for good or bad, we are in a situation where winners, from an industry point of view, are not defined by which is the company with the best performance or the lowest cost or with the best product. So the geopolitical factor on defining winners and losers has become really critical, probably too much, because somehow it's interfering with the capacity of companies to deliver on their business. But it's true, you see what is happening, right? So tariffs are changing from one week to the other. It depends on, let's say, not necessarily on political discussions, but also there are some personal relationships in there. So has become quite unpredictable sometimes in there. In Europe, it's true that we are highly exposed because for the battery area, the large majority of equipment and raw materials still coming from China. So if for whatever reason we get into a tougher situation on the tariffs between Europe and China, we're really going to get into trouble on the competitiveness side. On the US dimension, we are a little bit less exposed to that because there is no supplier of raw material or equipment in North America yet. A little bit like in Europe, they're lagging way behind China and Korea on that. And in terms of the exports, the exposure is a little bit less than we have with the imports from China.
I want to talk a bit more and maybe change the angle here. Let's talk a bit about the nexus between the automotive and the energy sectors. You have quite an interesting career background. You started off in the automotive sector and you, at one stage, you became the managing director of Nissan Energy, another the CEO of Baskvolt. Now you're a partner with Futuraiser, which invests in companies in the energy transition and also in zero emission mobility. From what you've seen, from your experience, how is the collaboration going between these two sectors? I've talked again a bit about this in other episodes, and it's the role of the interaction of the collaboration is changing, right? What's your take?
Yeah, indeed. When I started to work in partnerships between car companies and energy players, it was probably back in 2008, it was really hard because you are in front of two sectors, in front of people that simply do not speak the same language, right? So they are in different planets. It's really, really hard to get them working together and to get them sharing a vision of what it needs to happen, right? So for me, when I started to work very early on the scenario of 100% electric vehicles in our roads. So something became like a mathematical certainty, right? It's, you cannot do the same thing as you're doing with fossil fuels right now, right? So when you move to an electric vehicle, 100% electric vehicle scenario, there has to be a very, very strong interaction with electricity. There is no way around that, because the amount of storage capacity that you're going to deploy on the cars and the amount of power that all these cars will require if they are connected to the grid without any supervision is huge. That implies a tremendous investment in the grid capacity that it might not be needed if we have layers of intelligence on that, right? So so very, very early, I started to work on this bidirectional capabilities, saying, look, if we have so many electric cars out there, if we have so many batteries out there, and in general, a car is 95% of its time parked somewhere doing nothing but waiting, right? So we could try to create this interaction, right? So why not the car, while it's parked, is going to have a direct connection with the grid so it can give back or take additional electricity, depending on what is happening with the sun or with the wind or with whatever renewable energy source we are using. It's quite complex because, as you know, every country, even in Europe, has a different regulation. You have to homologate the charges country per country. The economic equation is very, very different from one country to the neighbor country. A lot of work to get that working, but little by little is happening. So I see now that BMW is launching the new models with a very strong vehicle-to-grid capability. They just announced the partnership with E.ON on that. That my fellow colleagues from Renault and Nissan, they're still working really hard on the bidirectional capabilities and commercializing already the services in many countries. So we are approaching that vision in which automotive and energy are linked, and they are in sync. Let's somehow in sync to make sure that we do it in the most efficient way.
I like the examples you brought up there. One that also, and this is a bit out of Spain though, one that also comes to mind in Utrecht in the Netherlands, there's this Utrecht Energized, which is a very interesting vehicle to grid system, car sharing a format. It's really cool. It's awesome to see all these different technologies pop up and these different innovating partnerships between people. For things like V2G and V2X, I also really like how it kind of frames the narrative as EVs as batteries on wheels. From considering your experience, you mentioned that you've been involved in this for quite some time. How should we look at EVs almost as a connecting material between the power system and the automotive sector? Well, between the vehicle and the power system. Mm-hmm. And especially also considering system resilience, you mentioned there elements like renewables, which are obviously intermittent, and we kind of have to balance that out. I think this is being increasingly seen by grid operators. So yeah, what's your take?
A few key question marks at the beginning. So first of all was, is this economically profitable? Right. So is this a way to make money for the car company, for the energy player, and for the vehicle owner? Right, and we demonstrated over and over again in many countries that it is profitable. It generates actual value for the car company. It makes the vehicle owner, to get some money from the energy player, because at the end it's his asset delivering a service to the grid. And it's making the grid a way more resilient, and it's giving the energy company flexibility, right? So they don't need to invest in CapEx themselves, so they can just use existing assets whenever is required on their side. One of the other questions that was critical was, is this gonna shorten the vehicle battery life? If I provide vehicle-to-grid services to somebody, is my battery capacity be reduced faster than if I just drive? So we did a lot of tests. We actually make a huge field test with more than 300 cars delivering V2G services for a few years. We did a lot of tests in the laboratory. And at the end, we discover that if it's done in a smart way, so if you limit the power that the vehicle can give back to the grid to 10 kilowatts, for example, it is actually beneficial for the batteries because you actually avoid deep cycles. So because your vehicle is permanently connected to the grid, so you avoid situations in which your battery goes down to 10% charge and then you charge it again to 100%. Battery essentially operates into a narrow band of charge. Also, the fact that the battery is working all night, it keeps the temperature of the battery to a good level. So the efficiency of the car in the morning is a way better. So we got a lot of customers in the UK coming back saying, look, my energy consumption is a way better now that I'm doing V2G, because when it's cold in winter, low temperature is a big thing for batteries. Right? So my battery is already warm in the morning because it has been working the whole night doing V2G. So it's already at 25 degrees. So my energy efficiency is a way better. My garage is warm when I get in the morning because somebody has been working there all the whole night. So a lot of intangible benefits that we're not really aware just by doing stuff in the laboratory. So overall, so we see a lot of positive points in this business, and I'm personally convinced it's going to be a major thing in our grid system.
Is this the same study you're bringing up here that was conducted by Mobility House with Aachen?
No. Mobility House, we did a different study. So these ones are projects we did in the UK with OVO and Octopus Energy and E.ON and EDF. So we choose different partners to do different things, to do fleet deals, to do residential projects, try to explore all the different use cases to make sure it works everywhere. And I can tell you the customer adoption was really good and customer satisfaction was surprisingly good.
I bring up the Mobility House study because I think I saw something similar, and there are a lot of studies going into this topic because, yes, battery degradation is quite a topical thing right now when you're using this technology in such a different way, connecting it to the power system. And it kind of brought up also the element of, even if there is a little bit of degradation, there's also this idea of profiting off of the system, that the kind of mechanisms that allows consumers to tap into as something that's perhaps a bit sidelined in terms of the conversation around the real benefits behind these technologies. And on that note, I wanted to ask, how well do you think Spain's current market structure really values the flexibility that EV batteries can provide?
I would say work in progress. The regulatory framework in Spain is still not adapted to the new era of energy. So it's still a bit lagging behind what is happening in countries like the UK or Germany that are more advanced in the understanding of what a future grid looks like. But it's work in progress. Actually, I know the government has been a new bill on energy flexibility, allowing this independent flexibility operator to do business in Spain. So there is the recognition of the value that this work can do. And, the political landscape in Spain is everything but easy right now, right? So we need to be patient because getting anything approved takes a bit of time. But I'm also quite confident that sooner or later will happen and Spain will catch up with the other European countries.
Well, I'll be on the watch out to see when that does happen because, yes, indeed, regulation has come up frequently as quite a tough nut to crack almost. It seems very complex, especially considering the geographical layout of Spain and all the different territories. So very interesting. In terms of, you mentioned something there about being patient, but I kind of want to pick your brain about what really excites you about the future. What do you see happening in the sector that really spurs you? What gets you up in the morning with an excited, oh, that could be cool?
Look, when we started to work in this concept that the world will transition from fossil fuels to a society that is powered by zero carbon energy, we started to imagine several scenarios, right? So the most idealistic one was, all the cars are going to be battery powered cars. All the electricity in our grid is going to be coming from renewable energy. So we're no longer burning diesel or coal or any source of fossil fuel to generate electricity. It is like a dream society, right? So you can actually make a Hollywood movie about getting there. What excites me is I know how hard it is for the society to move, and the inertia we all have is huge. But what we see is a little by little, I mean, it's taking quite long, but little by little, we see the whole boat is shifting towards the right direction. Right? So this is what I was mentioning before. Right? So it doesn't really matter if we get there in 2035, 2040 or 45. What matters to me is that we are getting there. We're getting close to that society where there is no longer fossil fuels day after day. And that's quite an excitement. I mean, because for our children and for our grandchildren, so they will live in that world, right? And it's our generation that has been, let's say, instrumental for that tremendous change to happen.
Francisco, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It's been a pleasure hosting you.
Likewise, a pleasure to talk to you guys and to share this moment with all of you. Thank you very much for inviting me.
To you, the listener, thank you so much for listening to this final episode of the Energy Transition Special Edition podcast series. If you haven't already, make sure to check out the previous episodes where I discuss how transport decarbonization has been progressing in Spain and how the country has significant potential for the sector. Also, make sure to read some of the exclusive articles going live on Enlit World that investigate e-mobility not only in Spain, but across the continent. This is Yusuf Latif, signing off.